Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. As we get to the middle of this rains retreat, I've been talking in the first few weeks about how to develop the meditation deeper and deeper. And the last couple of talks is especially how to use your insight to cut through some of the problems and obstacles in meditation to get deeper. But it's not just focusing on meditation for the sake of getting into the deep states. It's also that what those deep states can produce for you. It's as if that the previous talk I was saying how insight is important to developing peace and stillness. But today's talk is about how important stillness is for understanding insight. It's important to develop those calm, peaceful states of mind. And the deeper that peace is and stillness is, the more one understands about the nature of Dhamma. It's not the fact that you can understand Dhamma just by reading in the books or studying the suttas. That just gives you the external view, which is important, but it's much more than that. You really need to see how the mind works. And it's that experience of how the mind works. You know, that what is a restless mind and why does the mind get restless when you get frustrated? And what does frustration feel like and why does that frustration happen? Why is there an end of frustration? Why does that occur? And what does it feel like? You know, when you are bored, or when you're just really upset, or when you're very still, where do these things come from and how do they arrive? It's actually seeing this whole process, the way this mind works, is actually the way to find this insight. And sometimes, for those of you who haven't got deep meditation yet, sometimes you have the simile of that when I was young, that sometimes you take a clock and take it apart to find out how it works. Well, you get a radio, that's as much as I could use in those days, and take that apart and see how it worked. And once you took it apart and had it all in bits, you put it all together again. And of course, that if you could get it all together again, then you actually realized how the whole thing worked. So for those of you who are falling apart in your meditation, you're going to pieces, as it were, don't worry. Because then you find out how you work, as long as you manage to find out how to put all the pieces together again, without leaving a few things out. So the point is, you understand just how this whole process works, and actually what is the cause and effect mechanism of the human mind and body. And it's actually seeing that, of how it works, is what we mean by insight. And of course, you know, just seeing how it works in theory, you know, getting the conceptual structure right is helpful, but it's nowhere near enough. And the only reason why people do argue about, you know, Dhamma is a lot of times because they haven't had the deep experiences of Dhamma. They don't know what stillness is like, real stillness. They've only scratched the surface. They don't know what, you know, cause and effect is because they haven't seen those causes which create those incredible still states of mind. I don't even know what suffering is and what happiness is. That old simile of the tadpole in the lake can never know what water is when water is always around you. When you've lived in water, born in water, spent all your life in water, you can't know what water is like. So only when the whole thing starts to disappear in the deep states of meditation can you understand what this thing actually is. And so it is the stilling of the mind and the disappearing of things which give rise to the great insights. And indeed, that it's one of the synonyms for nibbana, one of the ways of understanding what enlightenment is, or rather the nibbana, the cessation of all things, is this, the stilling of all sankharas, sabbe sankhara samatha. And it's a wonderful little thing, a concept, idea to focus on. This is what nibbana is. The samatha-ing, the calming, the tranquilizing, the settling, the pacifying of all the sankharas. And the sankharas, as the Pali scholars here know, and I do encourage to understand the Pali meaning, because the Pali meaning has a very profound impact on just the way you understand these terms. The sankhara Now, does mean the effects, you know, what's built up, what's manufactured, what's fashioned, if you like, just by, you know, that your actions of body, speech, and mind. So it's the effects, but it's also the whole process which causes it. That's why it's called the karma formations, and it's active and also passive role. And when you actually start to see the effects of karma, that's one of the things we're supposed to be pacifying and calming it down. Because remember that restlessness and frustration and boredom as well as bliss, these are all very often like constructed. It's something which has caused these things to arise. And even these things we want to calm down. It may feel strange for you that I included bliss there, but you also have to calm bliss down as well. That's one of the processes which happens during the jhanas. Calming the bliss, letting everything settle down. And the reason it happens is just because that's been your whole inclination, even to get into the jhanas. And that inclination, just the way the mind is moving, will happen even within those jhana states without any will whatsoever. It's just the whole momentum of slowing down, settling things. So even the blisses start to calm down and get really sort of profound. But anyway, that's sort of going very, very deep too soon in this talk. And the part here we're just talking about, like calming down, just the effects of life. And we also, to understand, to calm down the effects, we also have to calm down the causes, this will, this jhana, this doer, this wanter. That also has to be calmed down. And that's the cause of the effects being calmed down. Which is why that I've mentioned very many times, one of the very skillful means of developing peaceful states is to develop this making peace with this moment, accepting it, leaving it alone, not doing anything. You're actually calming the active sankharas. You're pacifying that inside of your mind which always wants to control, get involved and do things. Now, even if you can't do that yet, just to see what I mean by that dua, that's active sankhara, that karma formation, which we call the will, choice, doing, controlling, whatever you wish to name it. Even seeing that, there you're seeing something very, very important in Dhamma. To get insight into that dua, that controller, to the will, and how it just works, even if you can't stop it yet, at least to see how it builds up the states which you have to endure. Because all of the states of peace, or of frustration, of boredom, of joy, whatever, that's all been created by this sankhara business. And so now you've got to live with it. You've made this, even this body, it's been born and you've created this body. And you've grown this body. And even just the way you've reacted to your experiences so far in life has created this, you know, conditioned mind, the way you look at things. And here in this monastery, we're trying to create this positive conditioning. Positive conditioning which will allow the process of Eightfold Path, calming the sankharas, enlightenment to happen. And once you understand just how this whole process happens, you can understand just this is what I'm faced with right now. This is the reality of this moment. Mindfulness, its job is to make it very clear what you're experiencing right now. But as we all know that mindfulness is never enough in Buddhism. It's very clear, I forget what the sutta is, it's many, it's only one of the Yaka sanghas, many something or other. One of the yakas there was asking the Buddha, saying, oh, all one needs to do is to be mindful to overcome anger. And the Buddha says, no, no, no. Not three times, he only said it once. He said, mindfulness is not enough to overcome ill will. You have to also have loving kindness as well. There's something else which is needed there. Mindfulness is never enough. What mindfulness does is actually shows you the content of this moment. You feel it, you know it. And you try and make that feeling, that knowing, that perception as pure as possible. So you're not just trying to hide the reality of this moment, nor trying to make it something it isn't. Being completely honest and open without any deception, without any denial, without any wishful thinking. You just know this moment clearly, truthfully. That's a job of mindfulness. What wisdom does in insights is to understand how this came about. When you understand how it came about, you can always see that this moment, whether it's painful, whether it's pleasant, whether it's peaceful, whether it's restless, that this was created through causes. And you can actually trace back those causes. You know exactly why this works, why this has arisen. And that gives you the understanding, the insights into the nature of defilements, their food, their sustenance, but also just how the whole thing can be calmed down. Once you know how it works, you can work the system in your favor. Or rather, not in your favor, in the favor of enlightenment, peace, stillness, release, freedom. You work the system. You understand the way you work the system, the only way you can calm those sankharas, the results, is to calm the whole process by which sankharas are made. To calm the will. To calm the whole control and doing process. Which is why that mindfulness sees the content of this moment, and your wisdom leaves it alone. Makes peace with it. Opens the door of the heart to this moment, no matter what it is. Just is content. Is not demanding in nature. Easily satisfied. Happy just to be here. Understanding that wanting to be somewhere else is making a prison of this moment, making suffering of it. So you see this moment clearly, and you completely make peace with it. Completely at one with it, not in the sense of some yogic experience, but being one with it means you're not against it. In other words, you're with it. Accept it for what it is. And that really is not such a hard thing to do. When you look at it rationally, it's here anyway. So you can't change this moment. It's here. But the way we react to it is we create negative future moments. And that's our big problem. We can't see clearly enough. The obvious, the only reasonable, wise thing to do is to cop each moment sweet. Cop it sweet was the phrase I first heard in the Australian prisons. When a person was doing their sentence, they could do it hard or they could cop it sweet. In other words, they just accepted that's how long they had to stay in jail and make the best of it. And that's actually a very good way of looking at each moment. To cop it sweet means, here this moment's arise, let's just make peace with it. Even if it's unpleasant, if it's painful, let's cop it sweet. If it's blissful, cop it equally sweet, not more sweet, not less sweet. If you're bored, if you're interested, if you're restless, whatever, to cop everything sweet. And if you do that, you understand that you are calming the sankharas. You're actually practicing sankhara samatha. It's not the full calming of the sankharas, but you're actually on the process of calming things down. And you experience the results of that calming process. Because when you make peace with things in this way, you do actually find that things get so easy. And all this sort of the struggle, the sticky stuff, like a snail just like climbing up this steep hill, climbing through treacle, and just every time you just try and pull yourself up, it's just so hard. There's a problem there. It's not the hill, it's not the treacle, it's you're doing the wrong things. You're not making peace with things. You're still fighting, and remember, every time you fight, you're actually encouraging that will. You are reinforcing it, becomes stronger. And with the will comes a stronger ego and sense of self. Those two are just so closely linked, the self and the ego, that basically they're just two facets of the same thing. The will is just what the ego does. That's its function, that's its job. When there's an ego, there'll be a will. When there's no will, the ego vanishes. This is why the Buddha said few people can understand sabbe sankhara samatha when the will is completely suppressed, pacified. Because that means that the ego, the self, is completely pacified. And when that happens, you just disappear. And that's very scary for many people. That's what we mean by the understanding of anatta, the realization, to see the complete vanishing. Not just of who you think you are, not the outside ego, but the very essence ego, the one right inside of you. Every peg you can put a hat of me, a self, on is completely taken away. There's nothing left for you to even to construct even the last vestige of a me or a mine or a self or an I. Everything's gone. Not even a cosmic consciousness, not even a merging into the everything. The whole lot is pacified because the will is gone. Now this, again, I'm just running ahead too fast again. But when we start to pacify that will, we do see ourselves disappearing. And this is the great struggle of the early years of monastic life. Because what I'm asking you to do is to disappear. And that goes so much against the grain. In a world where we are given our identity, we are giving our names, we're giving our birthdays, we're giving our history, we're giving our report cards and status in society, abilities and who we think we are, our gender and our skills and lack of skills, that we are defined throughout our whole life. We become such solid entities. And so it's troubling to disassemble that entity which has been built up with such struggle. And many of you have actually worked so hard to create something which is acceptable to this world and acceptable to your friends, to your peers, to your parents, to even your teachers. You worked so hard to please others. And now you have this wonderful ego and you come here and I'm telling you just to disassemble it all. Gee, all this life I spent so hard to study and getting these degrees and being somebody, and now you're telling me I've wasted my time? Yes. I tell many people I wasted my time at Cambridge. Wasted my time studying and passing all those exams. Wasted my time trying to be somebody. But that's what you went through. That's the karma you have to face. And now you just try and disappear. You vanish. And the way you vanish, you can't do this through an act of will to try and say, oh, I'm not going to be here anymore. This is going to be my last life. Remember, the will is what fashions the self, the ego. That's why that vibhavadana, the craving not to be, that creates the self. It doesn't destroy it, because it's will. It's the sankhara which creates more things in the future. That's why you'll never be able to end rebirth just by that type of sankhara, that type of will, controlling doing. The only way it works is actually by doing this path of meditation. This meditation is so fundamental to the path of Buddhism. And even everything else, even the sila, is like the supporting factor. And the wisdom is supporting. It's the samadhi which is central. Because once one learns how to calm the mind down, one also learns, little by little, just stage by stage, learns how to disappear, how to fade away. Of course, in the beginning, it's hard to fade away. One wants to be, because that's one's whole motivation for lifetimes, and especially early on in this life. You want to be somebody. And actually, here in this monastery, you just disappear. Just in that the monk, you're just a monk in the middle of the line somewhere. Or an anagarika, you all wear the same clothes. And sometimes you do look alike. And many people don't know your names and they come and feed you every week. Well done. Do you know your name? If you think you're Ajahn Bamali or Ajahn Jirat, then you're just missing the whole point. That's not your name. Your name is Five Khandhas. Your name is Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta. Your name is Six Sense Bases. Your name is disappearing. And if you understand that, you understand that you're moving in the right direction. And you practice and you test that out. You just try it and see what happens. Disappear a little bit. And you have far more freedom, far more peace, far more joy. It is the joy and the happiness, the sense of freedom, the sense of profound truth, which is the carrot which keeps you moving deeper into the pacification of all the sankharas. You pacify them a little bit, and it feels that you're on the right path. Someone asked me about sadha, faith, today. This is what we mean by the faith. the faith in the end of all sankharas, the faith in nibbana, the faith in cessation. It's not so much the faith in sort of, you know, the triple gem, as if the Buddha was an amazing fellow and a Dhamma that just solves all your problems in the world, and the Sangha that is so inspiring and so pure and so wonderful. People know what you were really like. Would they be so inspired? The answer is yes, they would, because you're all really good monks, even though sometimes you can't see it, or at least you think you ain't. Even the Anagarikas, you know, you still, the people are really inspired by you, and even the lay people, even the cats in this monastery, people are inspired by, and even give them dana, amazing. But anyhow, the real sort of faith is in cessation, the end of suffering, and that's possible. If you have faith in that, faith in the calming of all sankharas, if that's possible. And how do you get that faith? That faith arises because you just calm the sankharas a little bit. You sit down and have a more peaceful meditation than usual. What do you mean by a peaceful meditation? It means sankharas have calmed down. You understand, by calming down it means they've finished, they've settled, they're not there anymore. To pacify something means you settle it so it disappears. Even small things, you know, that sit down. I'm getting older, and sometimes my body is more aches than last year. So you sit down, and sometimes you sit down on your cushion, your body aches, or your nose is itchy because of the pollen, or it's cold, or whatever. Or you've got stomach ache, or headache, or whatever it is. And you sort of see those sankharas. And you sort of sit there and they just start to disappear. And it's such a relief to be able to sit here and you can't feel your body. This body is a pain. And some of you, you know, even just remember just one person years ago in a retreat, just their hands disappeared. And they couldn't feel their hands. Well done. A little sankhara has been calmed down. Now put aside the fear or the shock. And how did that feel? I always said that feel good. That feel freeing, that feel beautiful, that feel happiness. That's where you find your faith. In that experience, something disappeared and it felt good. You have the faith in the path of calming things down, letting things go and things disappearing and happiness and peace coming. You follow that path. You learn how to calm the sankharas. Why did that piece of body disappear? Literally because you weren't getting involved in it. You didn't change it. You didn't try and get it comfortable. You just completely ignored it. You disengaged from it. You let it be. You weren't demanding it was this way or that way. You just put it down and left it alone. The same way that I pick up that cup and just say, is the water still? I'm trying to hold it still. You can never do it. And then I say, it's an easy way to make this piece of water still in the cup. Put it down. And it gets still. All by itself. When it gets still, there's nothing moving, it disappears. It's a path of calming things down, of pacifying the sankharas. You understand that when you pacify the active part of sankhara, the doing, the will, the choosing, the making, you find that the resulting sankharas fade, vanish. And the whole path becomes a vanishing. That's why that the way that I've taught meditation for the last I don't know how many years, pacifying time, this great torture of human beings. How many days are left of the retreat? How many days or moments, minutes are left of this talk? When can you get to the toilet? When can I go to sleep? How many hours do I sleep at night? How long till breakfast? How long till I have a cup of tea? How long? All this stuff about time, it just crucifies people. You calm time down. How do you calm down? You make time. It's will. Because the will, wanting, creates the future. It's the negativity creates the past. Didn't want this to happen. Why did they do that? They shouldn't have said that. Understand how ill will creates history. How craving creates future desire. Remember, when you let go of will, you actually, time starts to vanish. Which is why that's another beautiful experience, a great insight of timelessness which happens in meditation. When you sit there and just, you don't know how long you sat and you're fully awake, you're not asleep. Fully awake and time has no more meaning for you. Sit for 2 hours, 3 hours, 5 minutes, it's precisely the same. It's only one moment, this moment, now, that's all there is. And that's not a very deep meditation, but that amount of meditation is so profound. By deep, I mean it's not going that far, but it's still important. You've pacified time. Or rather, that time is the result of a sankhara, result of a process, the result of this willing business. Maybe it is because that the amount of will and doing is so less, so refined in the deva realms. That's why that time has a different meaning. Where one day in the deva realm is equivalent to hundreds of years, thousands of years of human life. Simply because the will is so refined and softened and hardly there at all. This is what happens if you just have a very strong will. So time just drags. But if your will is subdued and softened and calm and pacified, and you get into timelessness, you're so free of such a huge problem. It is like being in heaven realm. You sit for hours, the days go, who knows where they go, you're just meditating 2 hours, 3 hours, time after time. And it's no time at all. It is a type of heaven. And that's why when you pacify time, you get the payoff, the freedom, the happiness, the bliss. Then you sort of go into pacifying this thinking mind, this wandering mind. You have to pacify that. Sometimes, as I was saying to someone today, sometimes there is, in a sense, a controlling a will to pacify this. But it's like a will not to do. It's a will to actually, what I sometimes call, setting up the guard at the gate of your mind. Setting up the bouncer at the nightclub and saying, look, there are these problems, don't let them come in. It's a deliberate will not to do things. So sometimes if you practice restraint, remember that is a type of willpower. Type of controlling. And you might as well look at it that way for the time being. Actually, in truth, if you do it full on, 100%, it's not a will at all. But sometimes that's how it appears. Which is why the Buddha said, put effort to restrain the mind. Effort to stop the unwholesome things coming into the mind. So sometimes you need effort to sort of prevent the sexual fantasies, the dreams, the plans, the obsessions from invading your mind. You just draw a line, you put a guard there. And just like everyone else in this world has to do some work, that's your work. It's the work of restraint, the work of guarding, the work of the gardener to having planted the flowers and the trees is to guard them, to protect them, to make sure that nothing harms them. That's your job. It's like the gatekeeper, like the guard, like the cemetery attendant, just to make sure no one desecrates the gravestones. That's all you need to do, just to keep aware and to make sure that these things don't come in. And that's what one needs to do, to create that sort of caring, protective attention. If you want to call that will control, fine, but please do it. And then you find, when you put the gatekeeper clearly on the mind, and you just say quiet, calm, still. And when the mind starts to experience some stillness, that gatekeeper is still there, protecting what has occurred. Protecting it, valuing it, caring for it, developing it. So those moments of peace, stilled from the thinking mind, last longer and longer and longer and longer. There's something lost when you stop thinking, and that's you again. Now how many people just measure themselves by their intelligence, which is just their ability to think clearly and to argue the truth with other people. But all they're really doing is contesting thinking patterns one against the other. And instead of actually contesting thinking patterns like two sumo wrestlers battling it out in the ring of concepts, we don't need to have that battle. We calm everything and we win the battle very quickly. We have silence. We've stilled the mind so the concepts don't come up. You're free. You're peaceful. The result of pacifying the sankharas is freedom, happiness, end of suffering. Even if you can't pacify the thinking for all that long, even if it's only for 1 or 2 seconds, please know how it feels. Investigate, have insight into the pacification of the thinking mind. And if you investigate it, feel it, know it, it's so nice. If you know it very well, every time you have a thought, it's like a crazy, like a torturer, like being in a prison and being harassed. It's like having married this sort of tyrant who's always on at you, or going to a job where a boss never leaves you alone, always haranguing you, always shouting at you, always telling you what to do, always sort of putting you down because you never did it right. That's what the thinking mind is like. So when you're pacified from that, oh, it's just so nice. When you realize that, you are understanding some other cause. You're having faith, confidence, delight in the quiet mind. Sure, you disappear, and that's the trouble. That's the thing about it you don't like. Because when you think, you're in control. When you don't think, that's really scary. It's as if you're cutting off your hands or taking your hands off the motorbike when you're driving along. Gee, how can I balance when the thinking is not there to tell me what to do, to nudge me this way, to nudge me that way? But after a while you get the faith and the feeling that it is okay not to think. It is okay not to control. It is okay to let go and disappear. It feels good. More insight is occurring into what we mean by anatta, into cessation and fading away. Because this is what's happening. Sooner or later you have to do this thing we call focusing. It was like an insight. Why do you have to watch the breath? Why can't you just stay present moment in silence and just leave it there? But there is something which we call diversity and unity. There's a diversity of the senses and all the various objects of those senses which create just this noise. You know, the noise of sensory experience. And to calm that down, we have to focus. To turn from many to one. From 6 senses to 2 senses. The touch plus mind. And eventually just to mind. That is the focusing of the mind, which is one of the great discoveries of the Buddha of how to end samsara. Just staying with silence and no thinking was not quite enough. You do need to focus. That's the okaza, the whole out of samsara. Because with the focusing of the mind, you find that things get even more still. The diversity was something we also needed to calm down. To stay on one thing instead of always moving around from one object to another. Even though you have non-verbal attention, still the mind is moving. And that is a pain. Sometimes why it moves, even if it's non-verbal, because there's an inclination of this mind to seek for happiness now here, now there. Always moving from one thing to another. You ask, why is it always moving? Why is restlessness? Why does it happen? And then again, it's because you're not content with this one thing. The mind thinks the next experience is interesting, is useful. It's the reason why people wander all over the world, why they read books, watch movies, and go from place to place. What are you looking for? Every time I've gone from place to place, the trees look exactly the same, no matter what part of the world you're from. People look just the same, always got two ears and two eyes, and the rest of it. So why? You go see the Great Wall of China. It's no big deal. Just walls are walls, you can go and just in front of the monastery. We've got a wall there. If you want to see a wall, go there. What's the big deal? Why do you have to spend so much money going to the Eiffel Tower? You don't need to go to the Eiffel Tower, just, I know, climb on top of the roof of the kitchen, and so you can see a lot of there. That's why do people want to do these things? Sometimes it's just something more to do, just the next thing. And sometimes that next thing business, you get insight into that, that we are next thing people, always going on to the next thing. But earlier this year, I used the old metaphor of life being a journey, and meditation stopping that journey, stopping and sitting down somewhere. That's a hard thing to do, because we're always on to the next step, the next place. The next place where we can sleep, the next experience which we have. We're always so much onto the next thing, we're never at the place where we really are now. Meditation, being more fully where you already are, never worrying about the next thing. And that's why the mind goes from one sense door to another, always looking at this and that, instead of just staying where you are. Staying where you are is another level of pacification. A pacification of a subverbal movement of the mind. To be able to do that, again, gatekeepers are needed. And a sort of object to train on. So why the breath is the one which was used by the Buddha. We deliberately tell ourselves, I'm going to watch the breath. Again, you can say that's controlling, fair enough. But what you're really doing is you're saying no to diversity. You're pacifying all the other senses which might come up. You're calming your body down, as I said earlier, when the hands disappear. Because if you're really watching your breath, you can't feel any other part of your body. You don't know whether it's cold or whether it's hot, whether you've got an ache in your leg, whether your knee is hurting. You just can't feel it anymore. You're fully focused on the breath going in and the breath going out, and nothing else whatsoever. You've let go of diversity. You've pacified that mind which is always going to the other senses. You may also say you've pacified all the other four senses. You pacified seeing, hearing, smelling and tasting. You pacified most of the sense of touch. All you have left is the breath. So calming it down, pacifying. You don't get this through so much controlling, holding on. Remember that, I've done that. If you hold on to the breath, you're doing it the wrong way. You won't be able to sustain it. You just get tense. You don't feel the joy of pacification. But if you do it properly, the pacification of everything else, and the guard which stops those things coming up. And you're just kind to this breath. You're not mean to it. You allow it to happen. You pacify the cause for all these other things coming into your mind. And all you've got left is the breath. It's beautiful. The times when you've just been watching the breath go in and watching the breath go out, there's something which happens to your mind state. It feels good. It feels peaceful. If you stay there long, you get quite a lot of joy. Nice joy. That's why I call it the beautiful breath. It's beautiful. It's joyful and it's happy. Because you're free of so much suffering. That's huge insight there, if you could mine that for all it's worth. Why is it just sometimes you're just so happy just watching this breath? What other people in this world have to go watching the footy, reading magazines, go travelling to see Paris and London, worry about who's winning in the Olympic Games or English Premier League, worrying about their relationships and having to have sex and having to get money and having to do this. And all you have is just the breath, and you're far happier than any of them. Why? Please get insight into that, because you understand the reason is you pacified everything. All these other problems have let go of. There's nothing to do except just think about this breath and how to calm it further. That's the whole, all you got left to worry about. You know, not really worry, that's not the right word, but you can understand what I mean there. All this in the world is people who have so many problems. When you're meditating, the only problem you have is just this one breath. Or maybe problem, make sure the next breath. If you're breathing in, make sure the next breath goes out. If you're breathing out, make sure the next breath gets in. That means you'll be living. Maybe that's the only thing you have to worry about. Keep alive, make sure you breathe in the next breath. There's not much of a thing to cause problems to the mind. You have freedom. Freedom from so many burdens. The path of pacification relies on the fact that when you're free from burdens, it's happiness. That when a whole heap of suffering ends, you feel a beautiful peace. And you do this stage by stage, by calming the sankharas. Stage by stage, you get more peace, more freedom, more happiness, more liberation, more joy. And you find that, wow, this is what the path of Buddhism is all about. Letting go, being free, abandoning suffering, getting blissed out. This is not attaching to bliss, it's attaching to the path of pacification of the sankharas. Because you know that this will lead far, far deeper. And as it leads deeper, when you get the idea of it, it becomes easier and easier. So you let go of the more sankharas, the more the better. Okay, I've let go of this amount, let's let go of some more. So far it's been fun, let's go further and see how much fun it can be. And take it from me, it gets enormous fun. More fun you can ever imagine. As you start letting go of the breath, a beautiful nimitta comes up. What is that nimitta? That is the jitta, the prabhasara jitta, because it's usually radiant and glowing. Prabhasara means a radiant mind. The mind, the sixth sense, released from the other five senses, like the moon released from the clouds. What do you mean by released? It means the clouds have been pacified. They're not there anymore. The five senses have been so calmed down, they're not there. All you've got left is the mind. You can't feel the body. You can't feel the breath anymore. The breath has been calmed, pacified. And you've done that not by creating causes to keep the senses there, which is called controlling, worrying about them, but just by ignoring them and just watching the breath. Calming the breath, looking at the beautiful part of the breath, and allowing the whole process to happen. And there you have just the jitta, just the mind. Number one, you have some idea of what the mind is. Number two, five senses and body disappeared. Similarly of the tadpole, now you know what the mind is, what the body is. You know what five senses truly are once they are subdued. You're pacified. Those nimittas, incredibly beautiful, wonderful, blissful, and so productive of huge insights. Again, insights into the way of calming, samatha-ing, the sankharas, calming them down until they disappear. Now you have real understanding of what the Buddha meant by these things. Now you know that sometimes people take that phrase of prabhasara jitta, the radiant mind, and think it's some original mind, some essence of all being, the goal, God, or cosmic consciousness and other stuff like that. Again, because they haven't really touched it deep enough to know it fully. When you actually see what's really happening, you get the real insights, and this is insights based on experience, again and again and again, knowing it so well, You'll never mistake it. That's why this path gives you huge understandings and wisdom of actually what happens and what Dharma truly is. And just getting up to that much of a radiant mind, a nimitta, and you know it so well. You know that that's what you'll see when you die. When the five senses stop because of physical death, you see the light and that's what you're seeing. You understand at least about reincarnation or rebirth, if you like. And you also understand what gets reincarnated. Not as a theory, but as an experience. You've got the mind there, the jitta. You can see it. You're with it. You understand it. You know it so well. Of course you understand. Yes, bodies die. Jittas don't die. They fade away through nibbana. You understand this because you see it. You're right close to it. And that's really worthwhile, getting that sort of insights. That solves so many physical, external problems. You go deeper. You pacify the jitta. Now that's the real fun part. You pacify so much, you go all the way. All the way in samatha and things. Just see how much more you can let go of. You let go of the nimitta. Not controlling it anymore. And that's how you enter the jhanas. The jhanas are the result of very strong calming of everything. Calming of the will, calming of the body, calming of the mind, the breath, everything. And through that subtle softening, calming, pacifying, you enter these amazing bliss states. And those bliss states are a result of calming. Many sankharas have gone by the time you enter those bliss states. But after the entering, the most important thing which is calmed down is will itself. It cannot really be operative anymore. It's stopped. And those are great experiences. You've actually calmed down the cause. Almost, I'd say completely when you enter the jhanas. And because of that, if you stay there long enough, it just builds up the calming. The cause is not there, so it's just like you stop feeding people. Stop feeding people food, they wither and get smaller and weaker, and eventually they die. If you stay in jhanas long enough, you go from first to second to third to fourth, in the arupas, eventually to nirodha. Because the whole mind isn't being fed by the will. And when it's not being fed, it's pacified. And it just, the whole momentum of the past, which stops you getting from the first jhana to the second jhana, the whole momentum just gets used up. And when that course momentum of life gets used up in the first jhana, then you'll morph into the second jhana. And if again, that momentum which keeps the second jhana going is used up, just like, you stop feeding a person or just cut off the gas supply to your car, you get slower and slower and slower until eventually you just go down the... You can see that speedometer just going down from 30 kilometers to 20 kilometers an hour, 10, 5, 2, 1. It's like going through the jhanas, getting slower and slower. There's more and more things fade away. And for those people who ever do get into jhanas, that's what you see. Just more things disappearing. The great disappearing act of the mind is what jhanas are. And this really is the fun part. Not only is it blissful, but this really sort of kicks your stupidity right up the backside. Because you're seeing the mind go, vanish. The mind is also a sankhara. It's created. It's created just not by a god, not by a self, but a whole process, a whole heap, eons of just doing and will, lifetimes of activity. Bodily speech and mental activity has created this citta which you're allowing to fade away now. It is a sankhara, and you're pacifying all the sankharas. So when we talk about sabba sankhara samatha, pacifying, calming all the sankharas, this is what you're actually doing as you go in the jhanas and work towards Nirodha, till the mind ceases, till nothing is left. No cosmic consciousness, no God, no experience, no perception, no feeling, no ultimate reality, nothing, not even nothing is left. Understanding this is understanding just how Nibbana happens, and what the great insight of the Buddha was. So get into those jhanas and start to see things fading away, and understanding just what mind, what body is, what life is. The first part is the hardest, simply because you don't want to let go. Because to let go, to pacify the sankharas, means you're disappearing. This is why we have all these tricks, and all these skillful means, anatta-sanya, just, you know, there's no one in there anyway, just keep plugging away at that, understanding no self. You can look at the scientific journals, scientific neuroscientists are very clear on that, there's no self inside here, it's just a construct. Great, that really helps. Just, it's very clear in the suttas, there's no self in here, that's basic Buddhism, great, that helps. Keep on plugging away at that, until at least you get brainwashed into understanding, yeah, maybe that's actually true. So it allows you to let go of the will during your meditation. It's because of you and your identity that you're restless. You can't let go and be still. The more you penetrate non-self, the easier it is to be still. It's also why I say that if a person can't get into jhanas, they cannot never really penetrated anatta. If especially, obviously an arahat gets into jhanas easier than anything. That's why they say even, I think, the anagami, without any problem, without any difficulty. Why is that? Because the sense of self has just been almost abandoned. There's no one to do any sankara-ing. That's a strange English word, sankara-ing, but you know what I mean. There's no one actually to make anything, to do anything. So obviously it's so automatic that the whole thing gets pacified. So little by little, you pacify the mind and it's just the end of suffering. Whenever there is sankhara, sankhara is dukkha. As I say, sabbe sankhara anicca, sabbe sankhara dukkha. That's what we're just saying in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta we just chanted. It's just dukkha. So once you understand this doing business and the result of doing what you're experiencing now, even in this moment, I don't know how you're feeling, but it's dukkha. Even if you're inspired, that's dukkha. It's all suffering, and the reason is because you are aware, alert, awake. This moment is the result of sankharas. If you could only have done a bit more pacifying, then all this will disappear. And as it disappears and fades away, stage by stage you get more insight. That insight gives you more faith. The wisdom and the faith, they don't balance each other in the sense that you first start off with lots of faith and little wisdom, and then you end up with heaps of wisdom and then hardly any faith. The two grow together. As you get faith and confidence into this path, as the insights keep on accumulating and the wisdom increases, your faith gets more and more. So it's not as if a person who has got, you know, enlightenment wisdom doesn't need faith anymore. Therefore it disappears. It's the opposite happens. The faith gets extreme with enlightenment wisdom. So this is actually how it all works out. And how you understand how to pacify the mind. But it's a tough one, because even the Buddha said that for those with little dust, with lots of dust in their eyes, in this generation, which is indulging and delighting in things and enjoying things, it's very hard for them to understand sabbe sankhara samatha, to understand the calming of all sankharas, calming of the will and calming of the things created by the will, calming of samsara, It's hard for them to understand that that could be a thing which is worthwhile going for. But for those who have calmed down enough, who have little dust in their eyes, they can see that's the only way, that's the only path to happiness, to freedom. Try the opposite. Just so many much business, so much tiredness, so much frustration, so much not getting what you want, so much toil and trouble, even the few years you've had, let alone a whole lifetime, let alone many lifetimes, let alone many eons. The Buddha said, the number of times you've cried is more than the waters in the whole oceans of this world. The number of times you've died, if you've piled up your bones bigger than Mount Everest and the whole Himalayas. The amount of times you've shed blood, again, more blood over your lifetimes than just actually from getting your head cut off. More than the ocean, the waters in the oceans. That gives you a sense of nibbida towards this whole process. Surely there must be a way out, and this is the way out. And you can taste it little by little. Your confidence should grow. So as you're meditating, remember it's all pacifying things, calming things down. Put those guards at each stage of the meditation. And don't be sort of concerned. Ajahn Brahm says you shouldn't do anything. So I'm just going to let go and let my fantasies roll, let my sleep come and whatever. That's not what I mean. The not doing is also a restraint, a protecting, a guarding, a bouncer. The best bouncers of nightclubs just need to stand there. They don't need to fight. Just their presence is enough to deter all the riffraff and unwholesome people who should never come into that nightclub anyway. And that's all you need to do to have mindfulness, which is strong, which is wise, which is protective, which is caring. And if you do that, little by little, your faith will grow, your wisdom will grow, your peace will grow, your freedom will grow. And you find this path, this deep meditation, it is the way to Nibbana. There is no such thing as dry insight meditation. You can do this without the jhanas. There's no such thing as another way. There's only the Eightfold Path of letting go, pacifying the sankharas, and experiencing the results of pacifying the sankharas, which are the jhanas. Experiencing them enough just to go the whole hog, and pacifying every last sankhara, and with it just giving up your birthright of a self, forsaking everything for the sake of Nibbana. And that's what we do, that's what Buddhism is all about. That's how insight comes from the calming of the mind. And that's the talk this evening.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sanghaṃ.